Hello, everybody, and welcome to Fortress Comic News, episode 332. I'm one of your hosts, Chris, alongside my co-host, your Mike. What's going on, Mike?
What up? What up? Not a whole lot. Read a couple comics this week. Flash is on HBO now. For those, I've had some people text me that they watched it.
Do you apologize to them?
Yeah, well, I got some mixed reviews. I like one person said it was an enjoyable plot, but CGI was trash. Ezra Miller ruined the movie, and that was even before they like finished the first part of it. But it is what it is. Hey, it's a free movie up there. Yeah, I don't think I'll be watching it again. I almost did watch The Batman though this weekend again. It was almost time for me to watch that, but.
I don't think I watched that. That was a good movie.
Yeah.
I went through and was like canceling subscriptions of stuff I've been paying for and don't use.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them got me because apparently I have a Paramount Plus account.
What?
Yeah. And I was like, I haven't watched this. Like, what the fuck do I have with this? Yeah. So I canceled it and it was like, if you don't cancel, we'll give you 4 months for free. And I was like, well, oh, 4 months for free. So I clicked yes. And I sat there. I'm just like, they're going to get like 2 or 3 more months out of me to pay.
Oh, yeah. Gonna you're going to forget about it again. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That, I do the same shit.
But now I have 4 months of Paramount Plus for free that I won't use.
Yeah. I don't even know what's on Paramount. I know there's stuff I want to watch on there, but I don't know what. I can't think of it.
I've been wanting to give Star Trek another chance. Specifically.
Yes.
Next Generation.
Oh, you've never watched all of Next Gen?
I have, but okay. I was a kid and I hated it.
See, I loved it as a kid. That's so weird.
No, I hated that stuff as a kid. And it was like, that's my dad and my brother are big Trekkies.
Okay.
And I didn't like it. So it's been a joke for a long time with me that, like, you know, Star Trek is trash. But I tried watching the original and that's not watchable anymore. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's
Star
that's
Trek
just,
fans out there. It's just not good.
It's just. It's definitely aged out of the movies. I love the movies; are so much fun.
I do like the movies. The movies are really great.
The new movies. I'm sorry, like the new 4 movies they made, 3 or 4.
Oh, I'm even like the original movies from the 90s, like Star Trek 1 through whatever it was. Like, mm-hmm. I like those too.
Okay,
because we'd all go see those as a family.
Uh-huh.
Actually, one of my parents' first dates was to the first Star Trek movie.
Is that The Wrath of Khan?
No, that's the second movie.
Oh, I guess The Wrath.
That is Star Trek, the motion picture.
Oh, wow. Very fancy.
Yeah, but I've been told as an adult that I should give Next Generation another chance because of a lot of the themes that it deals with. Interpersonal politics and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I do. That's probably why I signed up for it is like, oh, I'll watch Next Generation. Then I just never did.
Yeah,
so I guess I'll say it again. I'll give Next Generation a shot, and I probably won't.
I've always liked Next Generation. I don't think I've seen the whole series, but it wasn't even like any parents. Usually you're introduced by an adult. I think my sister and I would just watch it because there were so many reruns when we would be off from school that we loved. We loved Patrick Stewart from X-Men. And we're like, shit, like. He's like the best part of the show. And I think just the love for Patrick Stewart is why we ended up loving Next Generation. But then you fall in love with like the cast of characters like Data and Worf.
Yeah. And, for me, you got to think, let's see, Star Trek Next.
And while he's looking that up, we have an interview today, folks. So stick around. Adam Cahoon will be on the show from Vault Comics working on The Nasty. Really, that's the book, not just The Nasty, but The Nasty, the book. So
it's The Nasty. So Star Trek Next Generation aired in 1987 and stayed through 1994.
Mm.
So you got to think, I'm probably watching reruns as a little kid.
Yeah.
A little kid who's obsessed with Star Wars and Batman. And
you're like, there's no laser swords in Star Trek.
And I'm like, dude, like, let's be real people. Like, this sucks. Like, it's a bunch of people on a spaceship. I don't see a single laser sword.
Yeah. No laser swords. Like,
if you really want justice in space, just call Batman. Like, he's got it under control.
He just needs to put an air breather on or something like that.
No, so we're probably talking like late seasons, 93, 94 is when I'm first introduced to it. Mm-hmm. And I am 6 years old.
Yeah.
So that's when my opinion of Star Trek came. Where my opinion of Star Trek came
from. I was more like 13, 14.
Yeah.
So it was weird, though. I think I was more into that than Star Wars. Like, I was watching Next Generation, not really caring about, like, I had seen the new trilogy of Star Wars, but I never really rewatched any of the Star Wars movies. I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting. Also, yeah. I still have my VHS of the original movies, so.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Nice.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
So Paramount Plus, you got to watch the Star Wars. Star Trek. There's so many different Star Trek shows, and I've heard they're all pretty good.
Yeah. My dad's really enjoying the new one.
Beyond?
I think that's what it's called, yeah. Except he said there was one episode where they break into song, and he's like, I skipped that one.
I would love to see that one.
I'm kind of with him on this. Like, I don't hate musicals, but I'm not a fan like you are. But I do absolutely despise when my shows, like, just randomly turn into a musical for an episode.
Well, I mean, if it's a musical, why is it a musical? Like, did they get attacked by, like, nanobots that are programming to sing the song?
Yeah, I'm sure it's in, but still, like, dude, when Flash did it, I was just like, oh.
Yeah.
I get it. You were all on Glee.
Like, yeah, I think it was funnier because they're all from Glee, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's just how I feel about it. I know. Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people that say it's awesome. So
cool. Yeah. I would like to check those out eventually. Yeah. Yeah. I guess we'll just jump right into the news. Starting off TV, very sad news found out today. Arlene Sorkin, the original voice for Harley Quinn, passed away at the age of 67. She had a long career as an actress and screenwriter. The original Harley Quinn for Batman, the animated series. So the one that everybody knows and loves, the original appearance, right? So very sad news. And I didn't know this. Christopher Lloyd was married to her. I believe they still were married. So,
oh, wow. I didn't know that either.
Doc Brown himself. So very sad news. Our condolences to the family, but to be immortalized as the original Harley Quinn is pretty badass.
Yeah, and I mean, we joke around about Harley Quinn a lot in the show because the more recent iteration of her is not something we
sucks.
Enjoy.
It sucks. Anyways, sorry.
It's too woke for Mike.
I don't even know if it's woke. It just sucks.
So. Yeah. I'm kind of the same bad way. It's just not for me. But
I let me preface this. I haven't read any recent Harley Quinn shit in like 2 years. Stephanie Phillips was writing it for a while. I'm sure it was really good when she was tackling it. But it's like a joke for me now.
It was fine when she was writing it, but it wasn't enough for me to stick with it because I just didn't care for the character where she was in that place. Like
Harley Quinn in the White Knight series is great. It's phenomenal. So you can still do the character. So we've had some good Harley Quinns. Yeah. Anyways, sorry about
that. I do have a lot of like nostalgia and love for that original Harley Quinn. Mm-hmm. And she even voiced her in the Arkham video games, which was a really great interpretation as well. So
yeah,
it sucks. I mean, it sucks, but she has a legacy in our community. So.
Yep. Yeah. So condolences to her and the family. Now I'm going to want to watch the animated series again.
Yeah, and when James Gunn does Harley in his new DC universe, like, there better be a tribute to that woman.
I mean, they even had a tribute, God, in the first Suicide Squad movie. Remember they opened up the trunk and it was the original costume? The, like, jester outfit? It was like, that was probably the best part of the movie, and then it was all downhill shitstorm from there.
There's no best part of that movie.
No. Star Wars Ahsoka, episode 1 and 2. I will start off by saying this. I watched the first 20 minutes of episode 1, everybody. And I should have listened to Chris last week when he told me to watch Rebels. Because I had to stop and immediately was like, I need to watch Rebels. Not that I wasn't enjoying it. Like, yeah, there's some cool stuff going on. But I definitely, like, the name drops and the character reveals and stuff, I feel like would be a lot more epic. Nice. If I had watched Rebels, and I think you can confirm that.
I'll put every preface in the world on this. This is my favorite franchise with my favorite character, with one of my my favorite actress.
Yeah.
All put together, and it's a sequel to one of my favorite animated shows in that universe. So there's a lot of favorites going on here. But I was thinking about, because I really loved it. I thought the first two episodes, which is basically one big movie, everybody, like, it's about an hour, 45 minutes altogether. It's a movie's length. And
this dude's badass.
This dude's the fucking man. Ray Stevens, who passed away right after it was filmed too.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So sad.
Yeah, but I really loved it. I thought everything there was great. The action was cool. I like the story they're going for. I love seeing all the characters again, like, you know, just Hera and everybody else in the Rebels team coming together in live action was so great. And since it was so fresh in my mind too, it was that much better. To the point where episode two ends, they haven't confirmed whether it's the exact moment, but it's the exact same way that Rebels ends, with them going like, we're going to go find Ezra and meeting up and walking into the sunset. So I have a feeling that that's that moment. Like, the first episode was leading up. This was also written and directed by David Filoni, who was the head of Star Wars Rebels. So
yeah,
there's a lot of Rebels going on here. I'm really curious. I haven't been able to talk to anybody who's watched it that hasn't watched Rebels, because I do feel like the negative here, and it's not negative for me, is that they do lean so heavily on Rebels to the point where I'm like, I was watching it going, I don't think people who've never watched Rebels are going to get what the fuck's going on here.
That was my problem. I had to stop watching it. Not because, and I don't want to say because it was bad, because like there's a lot of, yeah, that's a little furball's cute. Well, ugly, but in a cute way, you know what I mean? But so I've never watched Rebels. I want to watch Rebels. And also, if everybody remembers the famous Pat from Pat's Flashbacks, his take on it was he's never watched Rebels. He watched the first two episodes. He said it was really good, but he had no idea what the fuck was going on, was kind of his, which is like where I was. And I didn't want to like continue on and be like, okay, there's a lot of name drops and these like cool reveals. Like, they're starting these scenes off with like this character riding a speeder bike, which looked awesome. I have no idea who these people are. So I was like, okay, I need to go back and watch Rebels to enjoy what's happening here, because I feel like those are some epic moments.
She's an important part of that show and Star Wars lore, being the Mandalorian of the group. But like, so this image here, for audio people, we have a Lothcat on screen. Like, Lothal was the center point of that show. So seeing it in live action was really big for me. Like, the mayor who shows up. So this is a Lothcat. This is one of the creatures on the planet. Okay. So then I wonder later on if we're going to get a Lothwolf, because they played a major role in the story as well.
I gotcha.
The mayor who shows up later on, actually, you might have seen him because he's in the
first part. Yeah, I did see him. I saw part of it. Yeah, yeah.
He's like a big story arc that concludes at the end of Rebels. Like, he's a big part of that story. So like, all these things come together, and then what really sunk it in for me, and I think it's the next image. Nope, that's Batman.
No, that's Batman. I get that one, Chris.
I don't know why it skipped over. But so the one that sunk in to me was when they come to the mural of the Rebels crew, and she's standing in front of it, looking at it. And I'm like, it's literally a one-for-one image of what they showed in Rebels.
Yeah, okay. So they like... So the Rebels, what I gathered from that episode is like, the Rebels are infamous, right? That group specifically.
I think so. I guess my quickest synopsis of the show is, the show is about a cell of Rebels on Lothal. And we find out throughout the show that there's other cells of Rebels, and the show kind of ends with all the cells coming together. To get their first grand victory, which is to get the Empire off of Lothal.
Okay.
And then, like, you find out that all the cells came together, and that's what led into New Hope and all that, with what the Rebels did there, and so on and so forth. You find out that Hera was a part of the Battle of Endor, and, like, all these things. And so for Lothal, that cell is infamous. That's like the people who freed them from the grips of the Empire.
I got you. Okay, just for
so that's why there's like a mural there. But yeah, there's a lot in this. I mean, I think you can get what they're doing without watching Rebels.
Yeah,
because there is some stuff from Mandalorian in here too, like the witch that they say that the two dark side. I don't want to call them Sith, because they never really refer to them as Sith, but the dark side users. That's from Mandalorian, when Ahsoka captures the witch and stuff. And there's a lot of interesting stuff here. Like, I love Ray Stevens. I think he's a great actor, and he did a great job in this. This is like the first time in Star Wars lore that I can think of where, like, we're leaving the galaxy,
right?
because they talk about how Ezra and Thrawn are in another galaxy. So that's pretty interesting. So there's a lot of cool stuff going on here. I really loved it, but I, like I said, I throw a ton of caveats on that love because there's just a ton for me that's directed towards me. Mm-hmm. And I almost wonder if I'm a victim of too much information, in my opinion, on this one.
Yeah. I mean, it was perfect for somebody who had just finished watching Rebels. Because it was like, it was like, it feels like the next season almost. That's what it felt like to me. It was like the season premiere of another season of Rebels.
And to be fair, the reason I rewatched Rebels recently is because Dave Filoni did say that this is Rebels season 5.
Yeah.
So he hasn't hit it.
Right.
But I love that. I love it.
It just slowed things down a little bit for me, so I'll just have to catch up.
Yeah, so I'll keep talking about it every week because it was phenomenal, and hopefully it keeps up.
Yeah. Awesome. Movie news. After last week's discussion on Blue Beetle financials, we now have a better look at how the movie's doing 2 weeks in. After 2 weeks, it's only grossed $43 million and only saw 61% decrease week-to-week in sales. To put this in context, Flash saw 73% drop, and Shazam saw 69% drop. Nice. And I think it's the highest performing for as far as like critic scores, maybe. But
I think we talked about that last week, right? I have no faith in critic scores anymore because
it doesn't matter to me anymore.
I threw this in there because we talked about it last week and we were on a short weekend, and I just wanted to kind of reiterate what happened. And it seems like it's not going to meet its financials. I think it's not going to meet the financials they wanted. I think it'll do better than Flash because I was actually like reading a lot about like budgets and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So Flash had like a $200 million budget, quote unquote, which is probably higher because of all the crap. This had a $100 million budget, and it's at this, so it could probably surpass its budget, making a quote unquote success, mm-hmm. but it'll still fall below what they want out of it. I think the fact that it didn't drop as heavy as the other ones tells me that it's probably better in terms of quality, because usually that means that, like, if you went and saw it, Mike, and then told me, like, dude, it's actually really good, you need to go see it, more then I would probably go see it.
Yeah, right. So,
yeah,
right.
More people are telling their friends.
So, hey, if it's good, it's good. I'll see it when it's out on HBO, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And the one thing, not in the movie news, in the notes here, did you watch the Rebel Moon trailer from Zack Snyder?
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
Wow, what a kitchen sink blender of things happening in one movie. So if we remember correctly, this is the scrapped Star Wars script, right? That he had.
Uh-huh. It shows.
There's a little bit of Star Wars in there, but then there's like, we had laser swords. We had giant like spider monsters. There's a lot going on. If we know Zack Snyder, it was a really cool trailer.
So this is what I felt after watching it. It was Star Wars meets Dune, directed by Zack Snyder.
Yeah, and so we know it's going to be a really good trailer, and it might be an okay movie.
Well, see, I mean, I'll watch it because that Army of... What was it? The zombie movie
Army of the Dead? Yeah.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
It really was.
One. Yeah, I need to watch that.
It's nothing like you must go watch it, but like it was a good movie to watch for the night.
Better than Sucker Punch.
Aim the bar a little higher, Mike.
that was one of the best trailers I've ever seen, Chris. I'll tell you right now.
Dude, I was so stoked for that movie.
Yeah, I remember in college, like, this looks awesome. Look,
like,
this
is going to be great. Bunch of girls, like, women kicking ass.
Yeah, with a Gatling gun. I was like, what the hell is this hot track?
It was like somebody, like, threw together a bunch of video game cutscenes with no idea what's going on in the story.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it looks interesting. But, like, we'll see. We'll see.
Keeping the name Rebel Moon is really on the nose. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I laughed out loud when the guy pulls out a lightsaber. It was a lightsaber, everybody.
It was a lightsaber. Yeah. I didn't realize until the end of the until the end of the trailer, I was like, oh shit, this was scrapped. Like, I went into it still thinking it was the Star Wars property with that name. I'm like, oh yeah, it can't be. You can't call it Rebel Moon and not have everybody immediately think it's a Star Wars movie. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's gonna be two movies.
Yeah,
with possibly more down the line. So it's gonna be on Netflix. I mean, I don't gotta go up to a theater to watch it. So yeah, I'll give it a shot.
All right, everybody, we're gonna jump to this interview. We're gonna talk about The Nasty from Vault Comics with Adam Cahoon, and we'll see you all on the other side.
All right, everybody, we've got another very special guest for you all. Everybody, please welcome to the show, Adam Cahoon. Welcome, Adam.
Hi. Thanks, hey. Guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I thought you were going to do a Scottish accent, Chris. I'm a little upset. But...
Cahoon! Cahoon!
There welcome we go. To the show. There we go.
Yeah, we'll my whole family will turn around if you say that.
Yeah, yeah, okay. That's awesome.
Hey, they're talking to us.
Yeah, that's us. That's for sure. They're all wearing kilts. Yeah,
it's kind of like me. Like, my grandfather changed his last name when he came to America. So, like, if you meet another runt, they're related to me somehow.
Oh, every really?
One of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's a made-up
name. There's no one else in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's a made-up name. Huh? Yeah. Yeah. So, Adam, thanks for being here. It's your first time. We have to do the annoying thing of putting you through the gauntlet of telling us your origin story of comics. Mm-hmm. You've had some success as of lately. We're going to talk about that. So what got you into the industry doing art and comics and stuff like that? So how did that come about for you?
So I initially got into comics like in elementary school. Mm-hmm. I was in my elementary school, I was like one of three kids that drew. Like, I knew who the other two kids were. Mm-hmm. And we were all kind of at the same level. And then, like, in the sixth grade, I had a kid in my class who drew kind of like just like an adult. Like, if I drew muscles on a hero, it was like a sweater full of blankets, you know?
Yeah, right.
But he had like musculature and everything. Everything looked like it was in the right place. And
wow.
And I went up to him. I mean, I befriended him immediately because he had this gift that I didn't have and I needed it. And I was like, how are you doing this? And he was like, oh, it's all comics. And he turned me on to the X-Men and to Art Adams specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got into comics more as like a tool to get better at drawing initially.
Right.
And then like around high school, I started to paint and I kind of fell in love with that. And I just wanted to be a painter. And so I kind of threw comics to the side because I felt like that wasn't like fine art. Like, I was suddenly kind of enamored with. And so I would pick up comics here and there, but there was kind of this long kind of like winter in the wilderness where like I wasn't looking at comics at all. Mm-hmm. And I went to school to be a painter. I got out and I was lucky enough to find a gallery to represent me. And I had, you know, ton of group shows and a handful of solo shows. And for a while, I was just a painter. Mm-hmm. And I did that. And then I kind of realized that community, that there's no kind of community there. There's no like real like support and camaraderie. And you're working by yourself in a cave for months on end. Mm-hmm. And then you show your work and you're only talking to like gallery dealers and gallery owners and collectors. And it's kind of like snobbish kind of high society.
Right.
And so I kind of realized I was falling out of love with that and didn't know what I was going to do. And my buddy, Mark Espinoza, he wrote a script for Greetings from the Maglev. And he rang me up and he was like, you know, have you ever considered doing a comic? Because I have a script and I need someone to draw it. Mm. And I was like, you know, I'd never considered that. But I kind of needed something to do as I was kind of moving away from painting. And so I was like, yeah, I'll just do it because I love Mark to death. Like, we were friends prior to this project. And so I was just happy to work with him on anything. And I was like, mm-hmm. I'll just do this until I figure out what I'm going to do next. And I think I spent about a year on the first book. And then at the end of that, it was all off the races. And I was like back in shops and I was back reading books and I'm back going to cons. Mm-hmm. And I realized I was no longer like a contract hire for this project. And I was suddenly I was in a place where like I was going to do this myself because that community is there. Like, that you go into those cons and that mm-hmm. that room is supportive. And I mean, at least, you know, you might have to look for it, but it's out there. And like, there's people who want to work as a team on a project. Right. And that was really attractive to me. It was really kind of the polar opposite of what I was finding in painting. Because you could do it all yourself, but the likelihood is you're going to have a writer that you're going to work with, and you're going to have a colorist you're going to work with, and a letter, and you're going to kind of collaborate. And all of that is just going to elevate everybody's creative output. And so suddenly that was very like, I like the idea of having a team to like to work with, mm-hmm. be working with other creatives. And I like the community. I like, you know, getting excited for cons and going to cons and tabling and meeting people. And there's so much more. Like, the first con I ever went to was just a small one in San Jose, California, called Silicon Valley Comic Con. And I met Art Adams there. I didn't even know he was going to be there. Like, I didn't look at the docket. I was like, oh, it's a small con. No one goes to these things compared to like Comic Con in San Diego. So I went and he's just at a table and I just walked up and talked to Art Adams. And I was like, yeah. I can't, I'm talking to a god. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I've been following you since the sixth grade and you're just right here.
Right.
And it was, the world is just different in comics than mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. like fine art. It's just, it's so much more approachable. And you can do, you know, the scale is much greater. You know, you go to like a zine fest and you got people like stapling their pages together themselves, or you go to like San Diego Comic Con, you've got, you know, Marvel's there premiering movies, and you kind of have this whole, you can meet all those people and the kind of the right. spectrum is there. And like, it just, that took over. Now I'm,
yeah. That's, I think, we talk about it all the time, cause we have like a podcast community and a lot of indie writers and artists mm-hmm. in there and stuff. And, yeah, I think part of the success is you need those people. Everybody needs to support each other, kind of.
Yeah.
Right.
I love that. That's just, yeah. that's so much for me personally. And I know that doesn't necessarily work for everyone, but for me personally, that's how I want to make art. Like, that's how I want to be creative mm-hmm. is sort of, you know, like the most fun I had, you know, as a painter was when I was in school, when I was in a painting, you know, when I was in art school, because you go into the studio and you've got all these other artists. And you're right. all learning and you're all making mistakes and you're all right. like lending people like mediums and paints and different brushes and mm-hmm. different techniques. And like, there's so much more like, oh, we're all kind of in this together. And then you get out and you're like, oh, I'm in my studio by myself. And
yeah,
I like kind of the social aspect of, you know, comic book projects, because it's just more like you're hanging out with your friends and making art at the same time.
I've seen it on the other side too, where most, a lot of artists like comics because they can be by themselves doing the art, right? You see them succeed that way too. So
yeah,
I have seen it both ways, but if you don't know the right channels and things like that, it's really tough. So
yeah. And it is nice. You know, you bring a good point. It is nice to have a balance of mm-hmm. both, because there are obviously like the drawing is done by myself, you know, right. in quiet a space as possible, but every day, whether it's necessary or not, I'm sending like, you know, I'm sending my writers panels. I did. I'm like, hey, look at this thing I just drew.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a couple times a week, I'm just reaching out for no reason. Just being like, right. hey, I did this thing. What do you mm-hmm. think? And I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, that looks great. And then you're in a dialogue, and it's,
yeah,
it's always awesome. Constantly like refreshing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Having more of a direct, like communication with your fan base too is really nice
yeah.
too, because
yeah.
you literally go to the shows and you're like, the person walks up to you is like, man, I love that book. It was great, blah, blah. And you can have that conversation where a lot of other mediums, like an actor, when do they get to see the fan base?
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
director.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or they come up and call you a piece of shit. But yeah, either way, it's to your face, right?
I'll take that.
Sometimes you need some negative reinforcement, Mike, you know?
Yeah, hey.
Yeah. Bad press is still press.
Do better next time.
yeah. Sorry, that's awesome.
So then, you know, this, you had the Kickstarter, for Greetings from the Maglev, and was that different getting a script and doing the art that way? I mean, cause like, you know, when you're painting, you're usually starting with your own ideas, right? Or your own, what you want to do.
Yeah. So you have, you know, obviously much more autonomy, when you're painting. Mm-hmm. I do kind of like, and I've been very fortunate with the projects I've been on. The writers have all been very collaborative, and it's all been very like, here's, you know, here's our script, but try and make it, you know, make it your own as best you can, and do, you know, be as creative as you can, just kind of hit these marks. I like those marks. Like, I like that little bit of structure around mm-hmm. what I'm doing, where it's a little bit more like I'm solving a riddle, you know, because I have to kind of through my vision sort of tell their story and hit their beats. Mm-hmm. And obviously hit the page turns and the corners, and I like that, you know, a little more of a, like a constraint on what I'm doing. I kind of like that as a project, whereas like sometimes, you know, if I'm, when I was painting, you know, there'd be entire days where I wouldn't work because I'd be like, I don't have the idea. Like, it's not with me. But with comics, it's like, it's almost like I'm not relying on the muse or like some inspiration or some like unseen thing. It's like, here's the script. These are the things I got to plug in, go to work. And you know, I haven't missed a day. Like there's not a day where I'm just like, oh, I just don't feel like drawing. There's always like, you know, just draw this panel, that panel's easy. You can get that one done. Like,
right.
That's never, you know, for me, that's never really been a problem. Like reading, you know, taking someone else's script and making a page out of it.
Do you find yourself enjoying more like very detailed scripts where the writer gives you every little detail of what needs to be in there, or maybe a little more vague where it's just like, and here's a monster, figure it out.
Turn page, monster. Yeah. Draw.
I want a little bit of vague. I want a little bit of ambiguity.
Yeah.
I don't want like, is it Alan Moore? I think it's very like insanely detailed with what he expects people to draw. Now he hasn't called me. He's not asking me to draw anything.
Okay.
But I do like, you know, in the handful of writers I've worked with, there's like there are specifics, but then there's freedom within that too. But I want a little more than it's a monster. But if you give me it's a monster, then I'm just gonna have that's just free play.
Mm-hmm. That's there's, you can make a really shitty looking monster, I guess. Like not scary. Nah,
Why would you blow that? Here to draw monsters.
Like, yeah,
that's
right.
Why most people are drawing.
No, yeah. So let's talk about Maglev, the greetings from Maglev. So Kickstarter's funded. You have the books going out. You can also pre-order it right through local comic shops.
It's in previews. It's in Diamond. There's greetings from the Maglev, from Invader.
Comics.
Yeah.
Not so to, that what is the
Maglev is one word.
What is the Maglev? What is greetings from Maglev? Give us the plot synopsis.
So it's sort of a pre-apocalyptic world. It's like it's a world teetering on the apocalypse, sort of. You have this super highway that cuts through the country that was at one time in its prime, kind of a tourist, like a Route 66, sort of like tourist icon. It has fallen by the wayside, and the person that owns it is trying to bring it back into like popularity as like an elite superhighway for the rich, like a destination kind of tourist trip for the rich. So it's this magnetic solar powered freeway that cuts from one coast to the other, and only the rich can afford to go on it in their big, you know, hover vehicles across the freeway. But it's also become a power source for the rest of the country, which is completely completely poor and destitute. And so they're all siphoning power off this. They've all kind of gathered their houses and their huts sort of around this, all along the superhighway, and they're siphoning power off of it. So you've got this, you know, this rich superhighway on the top, and then you've got just gangs, and gangs have come up through the kind of the poor communities. And so you've got kind of Mad Max on the sides, and you've got like, you know, like Elysium or like the super rich kind of heading into the future on the highway. And so the guy that runs it, he wants to send his son out across the highway as like a PR stunt to like bring attention back to it as like a fun party thing. But because it's so dangerous, they hire Chris Miles, who is the protagonist, and she's there to protect the prince sort of on his journey. But they get, you know, attacked by gangs on either side. But it's basically Mark wrote it to be like a party bus driving through Mad Max. And so that explanation just came up in the last like couple of weeks, and I was like, "That's the explanation. It's just a party bus going through Mad Max."
That's awesome.
That's a great description.
Yeah. I don't know why we didn't
sold that. Sold.
Yeah, that should be the title of the book.
Yeah. Yeah. What the hell? That's awesome.
You need to just get a content creator just to say that, so you can put it on the back of the book.
Yeah. Get a pull quote.
Yeah.
Chris, let me spell your name right. Hold on.
Yeah, there you go. I want to talk about the panel layout just a little bit, because you have an interesting approach here. From those sample pages that you show, you have some of the art like surrounding those specific panels, and then you have some like free art without any borders. How did that how did that come about? Was it just how you felt like when you were drawing it, like, oh yeah, this layout makes sense? Because there's a lot of cool interactions you have between the panels.
Yeah, so a lot of like a lot of that is just by mistake.
Okay.
Like I said, leading up to this, I was painting. I wasn't looking at comics. I think I,
right.
You know, in the 10 years or so that I kind of put comics away, I'd pick up like a Mike Mignola once in a while, or I'd pick up you know, like a handful of comics just like here and there. But I sort of went into it and didn't want to get a lot of comic books right away, because I didn't want to start kind of sponging off of other people. I didn't want to start, you know, being derivative. And so a lot of what I was doing is just like me trying to figure out what a black and white composition looks like on a page, and how to make that sort of dynamic and move the viewer's eyes. And so, you know, a lot of that, you know, the panel layouts, a lot of the way I was drawing was just sort of me fumbling towards something that I thought would be visually appealing. And so it was sort of by accident that a lot of that stuff happened. And now, like, as soon as I finished this book, like I said, then I started going back into shops, and then I started like looking at other people's layouts and structure, and just kind of getting some ideas. But by then I'd already had, you know, 60 pages to kind of use for the next two books.
Right. So you kind of had an idea of what you like to do.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of that first book is just me figuring out what I make comics look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting way to like find yourself and then go back and check out what the industry's doing.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Well, I mean, part of it too is like at the time, like I'm very much into stand-up comedy, and so at the time I was listening to a lot of stand-up comedy podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of comedians talk about when they're putting a special together, they stay kind of away from the club. If they go to the club to practice, they don't watch. They don't stick around and watch other comedians. They leave. They get in as close to their you know, headline time, and they leave kind of as soon as they can. They try not to hear anybody else's jokes, because they're, you know, creatively you're a sponge and you just absorb things.
Right.
And whether or not you intended to regurgitate that or to use it again, sometimes you just accidentally do. And so I took that as sort of advice, and I was okay, don't look at other people's comics.
Mm.
You don't want to copy anybody. And I realized that was maybe a little bit foolish. Like I look at comics all the time now. I don't feel like I'm derivative. Maybe,
right.
Maybe someone
right.
will see that in my work, but I don't really see that being a problem.
Mm. See, I have the opposite problem. I just listen to every podcast I can.
Yeah. Then you don't have anything to pull from, because there's so many.
To be fair, I don't listen to many. I only listen to one comic book podcast, so I guess.
Oh yeah.
I guess I am doing that.
Listen to like tangential stuff. Yeah.
Well, that's great. I mean, it was your first Kickstarter project, and it was funded. Mm-hmm. So, and then you said it's available. Vayner Comics will be publishing it. So.
Yeah.
Congrats on the first one. That's really cool.
How was the connection with Invader Comics? Did that come about from the beginning, or is that later?
So we actually finished the first book that we just kickstarted. I finished drawing it in 2016. And then Mark and I kind of were busy with life, and we didn't get it lettered until about 2020. But around that time, I had made my own comic called The Tufts. And Mike from Invader, I think he posted a tweet, and he was like, hey, I'm here. I got a free day. Send me your concepts or your pitches, and I'll critique them. And I had four images, so they were like two pages each, because when I did the Tufts, I did them as two pages next to each other, so I could see what the whole book would look like. And so I had four images, so it was about an 8-page chunk out of the middle of the story that had like a nice beginning, like a setup and a joke and a payoff. Like it was just a nice solid like beginning and end chunk in the middle of my book. And so I posted a tweet, you know, because on Twitter you have the four images that you can put on one post. And so I posted the four images of the eight pages, and I just sent it back to Mike, you know, who I'd never met. I just saw this tweet on Twitter, and I was like, hey, this is my comic, The Tufts. And he wrote back immediately, and he was like, this is great. We should talk. And he was like, I publish comics. And I'm like, yeah, bro, I get it. I publish comics too. We all publish comics, man.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, we should meet. And so I looked up.
Do you have a podcast too, man?
Yeah, you probably have a podcast and you publish comics.
Yeah, we get it, dog. But I realized he was. I was in the Bay Area at the time, and I realized he was in Berkeley. And I was like, why don't we just meet up for some coffee? And And so we went and grabbed coffee, but it was like at the height of COVID, right? It's the height of like quarantine. So we can't meet inside. And it's like September of 2020 in California, and the fucking world is on fire. Like, there's just smoke everywhere in the air. I think that was the year we had the Red Day that you guys, I think, had this year. And it was just like, we went and met outside this cafe, and like, it's 100 degrees. There's smoke in the air. Everyone's wearing masks. It was fucking miserable.
We're drinking
hot coffee. just two grown men talking about comics on a park bench. And it was great. He was like, hey, Invader was called 215 Publishing back then. And he's like, I'm kind of making changes. I'm kind of doing some things. Maybe we could work together, you know, figure something out. And then we just stayed in touch over the years, the last couple of years. And when he changed to Invader, he called me up and he was like, hey, I'm trying to get you a spot. Let's figure something out. And then, kind of as soon as I got on the Nasty, he reached out and he was like, hey, I know you have some books already made. Let's go. Because like I said, the first two books of Greetings from the Maglev were already drawn. The first one, which we just kickstarted, was lettered and finished. And he's like, I know you've got, you know, projects in the pipeline. Let's see if we can put those out right now. So
nice.
And it's nice because I was able to do this while working on the Nasty, because this work is, you know, it's already been done. So I got a couple books coming out at once.
So this is volume one, and is there a volume two expected in the near future?
Yeah. So we're going to wait, I think, 6 months between kickstarting the projects. But I've got one is done. It's already printed, or it's on at the printers right now. Two is written and drawn. It just needs to be lettered. And then three is written. But that one I'll start as soon as I finish up the Nasty.
And for everybody listening, that comes out September 6th. So 1 week from this episode. So go to your local shop.
You can order that anytime. It's not there's no FOC, so you can order that on demand.
Cool. You made the nice segue for us bringing up the Nasty. I love it when our guests do that for us. We don't have to do shit. The Nasty, yeah. So you jumped out of that project like kind of in the middle of it, right? So how did that come about?
Yeah. So I came on. I think issue two had been finished, that was the artist originally on that was George Combates. Mm-hmm. He'd done issue one and two, but I think he had some like health issues and he got real busy with other projects, and he'd started I think they asked me to come on and help fill out some of his backgrounds for him because it takes place inside a video store in the 90s, and so they wanted someone to come in and just design a bunch of posters and fake movies and video cassettes to make it look, you know, like a livable video store. And so initially I came on and designed like 30 fictional movie posters, and then I turned those all in, and like the next week they reached out and they're like, well, do you want to come on to the project a little bit more and start filling out more of the book kind of as George does it? And I was like, yeah, that sounds great. And so I started doing that, and I turned all that in, and then eventually like it kept kind of snowballing into like more and more involvement in the project. And then one of the days I got a call from Tim Daniel, who's the head of design over at Vault. And he's like, do you want the whole project? Because George wants to back out. And you're already kind of sort of involved, and you know kind of what the story's about. So would you want to just take over? And so I said, yeah. And I've been on that project since I think January. I started doing, I started on issue three. So I started book three in January.
Nice. I'll be honest, it's a book I had never heard of, but after like reading the synopsis and stuff like that, I'm going to have to read it fairly soon. So, I mean, give us the rundown on it, because I mean, you're already interested a lot of people, I think, with it saying it takes place in an old school movie store. So,
yeah. So it takes place in Scotland in the 90s, at a time when they were having kind of a moral panic. And there were kind of these conservative leaders who were trying to ban all these horror movies. And they put a bunch of, a bunch of horror movies on a list called the List of Nasties, the Video Nasties. And there were movies that they were trying to ban from public consumption. Wow. So it takes place kind of in that environment. The main character, Thumper Connell, he's like a horror fan. And he's got an imaginary friend who's a slasher from a fictional horror series called Labor Day. And the character's name is Red Ennis. He's kind of this big kind of silent Jason Voorhees character. And as this moral panic is going on, their video store is kind of starting to lose business. And so Thumper and like all his friends that hang out in the video store, they decide to make a horror movie themselves, kind of put on this horror festival and bring the video store back to life. As they start filming their own horror movie, the imaginary friend begins to manifest and come out into the real world, and all kinds of trouble ensues, and that's cool. arms get torn, and blood and violence and gore. And
yeah.
But it's also just, it's just full of heart. And I mean, it's just a love letter to horror movies that John has written. It's a beautiful, beautiful story.
Awesome. Sounds right up Mike's alley.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm sold. Yeah. No, it's really cool to have like a horror book that has a lot of heart and, you know, actually being like people's hearts ripped out.
Yeah. Cause I mean, John, you know, I don't know if you know, John Lee's at all, but he, like his love for horror is apparent. Like it doesn't, it was always something that as a child gave him joy. And I mean, he started watching horror movies just way too young.
For any
child to watch. It's like I've seen pictures of him as like a 9-year-old with like, Friday the 13th posters behind him and like Halloween posters, and he's just like, I only just started watching these movies
in
adulthood,
by myself, where I could always
with the lights on,
with the lights on
during the day.
It can't be too dark out, for sure.
But it's just like, I think John's love for these films is so apparent in this book, because there's so much joy in this book, and there's so much, you know, sense of humor, and just like, you know, it's the darkness is sort of like on the peripheral.
How is that for you drawing gore and stuff like that? Was that something?
So here's the thing. Growing up, I didn't watch scary movies, but I was obsessed with like tactical horror. Like I loved, like I was obsessed with Rick Baker, the movie makeup genius from like the, I think, 70s and 80s. I love Rick Baker, but I didn't like any of his movies. So like if I could get any of his stuff in print, like I would just eat it up. And so like the idea of drawing horror is easy. Like it's nothing. Mm-hmm. Like that's a lot of fun to draw. It is a little bit harder.
Yeah. So I mean, it was fun to do that style of stuff, but different than watching it. Yeah. I get that. And there's an appreciation for the practical effects.
Yeah. That's my intro into the world for sure. Cause it was all like, that's how you do arts and crafts for a living to me. Mm-hmm. Like as a kid, I was like, oh, that's how you get to do this forever.
Yeah. That's a good point. I didn't think about it like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you're taking over for another artist, were you brought on? Did you have similarities to the style, and that kind of made it an easier transition, or did you have to adapt your style, or how did that for the book?
So they were, you know, to their credit, Vault and John and everyone on the project was like, you know, make this your own. Like, don't worry about copying George. Like, just, you know, make this your own book. But to me, I wanted some continuity between. Because I was starting on issue 3 and I knew readers would have already seen issues 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. I felt like that was like an awkward position to have a new artist come in. It didn't feel like there was enough of an arc, or it wasn't early enough. So I was like, so I tried to kind of hew my style as close to George as I could and still be comfortable. And so this is, you know, this is much more me trying to draw in George's world, but we're obviously very different artists. I don't think we're very similar naturally, but I did kind of try, and I kind of maintained sort of a style that was a little bit more in his world than it would be in mine, I think.
Yeah, it's always curious as a reader, because you get those, especially in like big two books, you see it a lot, where you get an artist taking over, and it's very jarring. And it can be good, it can be bad, you know, it can be anything in between, but it is just jarring when you got a longtime artist coming in, or just the guy that started the story and then somebody else takes over. So I'm always curious how that goes on the other end of the spectrum with what you guys do behind the scenes.
Ideally, it would be, you know, at least at a breaking point in the story, at least, you know, there are ways to kind of do it, but that, you know, that wasn't really on the table for us. Like this book, you know, it lost its artist, and I think, you know, honestly, I think it's a book that deserves to come out. And so I was gonna, and I've done everything I can to sort of keep that float.
with this one compared to the other project, I mean, you already have that finished. You have a deadline now. So how's that going for you? Like submitting, do you have to submit pages and a timeline?
Yeah, for that? Yeah.
Like, so, is that hard to do or?
No, that's, okay. I get up early. I do the work. I mean, I have, yep. Obviously I have, you know, a day job and I have a 3.5-year-old. So there's a lot yeah. of like, a lot yeah. of chaos in my life.
Right. But, right.
I've always been really good with deadlines. Okay. I'm that type of artist, mm-hmm. which, you know, I like to get up early and start work kind of right away. But yeah, no, I've so far I've hit all my deadlines a little bit early.
It's funny. I think, yeah. Okay. I think, like, I don't know if you've noticed this, Chris, but it was almost like pre-COVID when we would do interviews. We hear a lot of like grinding and like a lot of deadline issues and stuff. But then like after COVID, we talked to a lot of artists, and I don't know if it's just the volume of projects now or like people have a better grasp on what they're doing. But
I think a big part of that, and actually this kind of fits into what you're what's going on with you right now, Adam, was people had a lot of stuff. Because there was no comics coming out for like 3 months, quote unquote, yeah. no comics coming out, and people built up work.
Yeah.
And so it's amazing when you give people a cushion and you're not just constantly yeah. grinding just, them into the ground.
Just that few months yeah. to have like projects finished.
So, yeah, it's yeah, amazing yeah. what happens when you do that.
Yeah. But that's good. You already have a rhythm and
yeah.
and stuff like that.
I mean, also, like, I'm maybe a little bit older, and so I'm not. I feel like if I'd started in comics younger, that would be more of an issue. But the way it is now, it's like, no, this is just about work. Like at some point, you just have to get, you know, just have to log the hours.
Right. You just got to. And definitely. Like you said, you could just draw a panel at a time, even, you know, yeah. just it's like, okay, I could draw a panel and then, oh, I got to take care of the baby. So yeah, or something, you know,
my wife, you know, does a ton to kind of mm-hmm. like give me some space when I need yeah. it. And,
right.
We have a pretty good system going right now. And granted, there's a bit of a crunch with the Nasty because I came on the project late. Yeah. Some of my runway was sort of burnt up, but mm-hmm. you know, she and I both know this isn't how it's going to be. Like, I'm not going right. to need to be
right.
to maintain this kind of schedule starting in about a month and a half. I'll be done with the whole thing. So,
and we'll ask the one last annoying question before we let you go. Like, is there a certain style of story you want to draw like in the future? I mean, I don't know how many projects you see yourself working on, but like, would you want to get into like a fantasy book, or is there something like you're kind of doing a slasher book right now? You did a post-apocalyptic book.
Yeah.
Like, is there something you're like, that'd be really cool to do?
More monsters. I think
more monsters. Like nice.
Previously. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, all right.
Like
cool.
I sort of like, 100% fantasy, it would be fun, but mm-hmm. I sort of like some sense of already established reality. I like mm-hmm. some of that, like, you know, sort of like the way I like to work. I like a little bit of like structure and freedom within that structure. So, mm-hmm. you know, I like this because there's kind of like horror and gore set in a everyday environment. I do kind of like that sort of balance. Yeah, I don't know, man. I honestly, it's not the type of projects. It's the other creatives that I'm more interested in. So it's whatever, you know, whatever project is out there that okay. I can get on a, you know, kind of get in a gang and do. I think I'm more excited about than like a specific genre, I guess. Anything really. Probably not noir. Probably not like slice of life stuff. I need a little bit of. I need a little bit of fantasy. I need a little bit of kind of visual imagination.
Mm-hmm. And it looks like the Nasty issue 4 is yet to hit shop. So September.
Yeah. 6th. So that, so they, we're on a break right now. Okay. I think the FOC for 4 is September
6th. Yep.
Or not. No, I think it's the following week.
Oh, okay. Because I see it on Previews World right now.
It says on Diamond September 6th
is in the shop update. 6th.
That could be wrong, though.
Diamond's notorious. They might have to update it.
Yeah, shit. I think it's September 18th. I think okay. is FOC. Okay. I might be wrong about that. Oh, they're gonna fire me.
Sometime in September, we can.
Yeah, it's we're starting a big marketing push like around Labor Day for the,
oh, okay.
the FOC for right. So it'll be blasted everywhere.
Yeah, and we'll have this episode to share with everybody. So.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So if people want to follow you, Adam. I mean, do you
yeah.
do you make terrible life decisions like using Twitter or anything like that? Yeah. Where can we stun people?
Not anymore, but yeah. I did. Yeah. I have it still.
We all do. We don't know what to do with it. It kind of just sits.
Yeah, that's kind of the feeling.
We retweet shit once in a while.
I'm Adam C. Cahoon. So Adam C-C-A-H-O-O-N on Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, Threads. I think mostly those, but I'm mostly on Instagram and Twitter.
Okay.
With that handle.
All right. So everybody out there, you know the drill by now. I'll have links in the show notes down below. The links I'll have for you will be from the previews catalog. So you can just click on those, subscribe, give them to your local comic shops and enjoy all the good comics. Awesome. Adam, thanks so much for taking the time today. Really appreciate it. And we, you know, look forward to the next time, man.
Thanks,
Adam. All right, buddy. Thank you. Appreciate the show. Thanks for having me.
And we're back.
We're back. The Nasty from Vault. Check it out. We're big fans of what Vault's doing. Like a lot of their books. They've been doing some cool stuff. So.
Yeah. Barbaric's really cool. I don't know what else Vault's doing right now, to be honest.
Was Quest Aside? Was that Vault?
I think it was.
Was it Scout? I don't think it was
Scout. No, it was not Scout. No.
It was definitely Vault then.
I think it was Vault, yeah.
Quest Aside was a really good book. This is some fun news for me, Chris, because I read the last series. DC has announced
Batman back up.
Yep, there you go. There it is. Michael, not just any Batman. That's Keaton Batman, folks. You can tell from the jawline and the crinkles in his face. DC has announced new additions to its Batman 89 and Superman 78 comic line. For Batman 89, there will be a new series coming late 2023 called Batman 89 Echoes that will be written by Sam Hamm and art from Joe Quinones. So same team up. The series will introduce Scarecrow and Harley Quinn to the Burtonverse Batman. Nice. This is cool.
Yeah, and it seems like, from what I read, the Harley Quinn in question was supposed to be, or is based on Madonna.
Interesting.
So 90s Madonna. Which
that's wild.
At the time, I like makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I love these variant covers with the toys now.
Oh my god, yeah.
So funny.
Oh, wow. I do love that. That's amazing.
Yeah, but it's interesting. I'm down to see what it's all about. I mean, I still got to read the first. Is there two series now or just the one?
There's just the one where it's Two-Face.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, because it seems like what they're doing, they're going to base this on Madonna. I don't know if it's actually going to be Madonna. And then Scarecrow, you don't need an actor behind it. You just need the weird costume.
Yep.
And, it kind of reminds me of, do you remember when they did that animated movie for Batman 66 and it was William Shatner as Two-Face?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like that's what this reminds me of. It's like, okay, let's do wish casting for the 90s.
Right.
Like the Batman movies kept going.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool.
Yeah. I think it's awesome. I had a lot of fun with the last issue. I think this is cool. I mean, yeah, there's a big fan base for the 89 Batman out there. So.
Yeah, we got to pick up that first one. Read it.
Yeah. Great covers, too. The best part's the covers, because you always get, like, the movie actors on the cover. Batman, or for Superman 78, there will be a new series titled Superman 78, The Metal Curtain. It'll be written by Rob Venditti and art by Gavin Guidry. The series will introduce a new Kryptonian relic that crashes into the Soviet Union and creates a new enemy for Superman to face. Based on cover art, seems to be Mentallo. Really cool. It's a nice cover. I think it's a cool concept.
That's definitely Mentallo, right?
Oh yeah. And like having Superman 78, like having a villain he could punch is pretty cool.
So I saw this variant. I think this sounds cool, especially honestly, the idea of Mentallo coming from the Soviet Union back in 79.
Yeah.
Dope idea. Really I love cool. it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love me some bad idea. Don't get me wrong. It's really nice to see Venditti do a not bad idea book.
Yeah, right.
So I was staring at this variant cover the other day, right? And whoever drew this just drew Elon Musk. And I can't unsee it.
It does look like Elon Musk. God.
But I think this is my favorite.
Oh my God. The toy ones. This just reminds me of Robot Chicken for some reason. Because we have these action figure variant covers, everybody, for the... That is pretty awesome.
Yeah, so...
I feel like that one is a lot more effort than the Batman one, just riding a motorcycle.
It's, yeah. I mean, recreating Action Comics, number one. I mean, it's great. And I love that figure is actually real, too. Like, you can buy it right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great figure.
This is great marketing for the McFarlane toy line.
I think both these sound really cool. Good additions to their line that I will probably get 2 years from now because there's too much coming out.
These are the kind of books that like I'll read digitally and then I catch up. Like if I want to buy the physical ones, I'm just going to go buy them for a dollar each somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, these are ones that I'll probably like pick up a trade for down the line, or if they're like they go down cheap digitally, I'll get them that way. But yeah, they won't enter my pull list.
Yeah. Marvel announced that Blade's co-creator is returning to the character for one last story. Writer Marv Wolfman alongside artist Dave Cutler are teaming up for What If? Dark Tomb of Dracula number one. This What If? Comic will tell the story of Blade if he became a full-on vampire. And there you have the cover right there. It's really cool. Sounds like a fun story to do. Yeah, I'm a fan of Blade, and What If is always a fun thing. So,
yeah, these What If Dark stories have been really cool. Going back kind of the original format. Just a lot of fun. I've read most of them. I bought all of them. The only one I haven't read so far is the Spider-Gwen one because it's Spider-Gwen.
Yeah. yep.
But I really enjoyed them. And this is, I mean, to do Blade, get Marv Wolfman back in the saddle.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Hell yeah, man. Like, I'm all about that. And it's just good stuff. And I'm glad they're naming it Tomb of Dracula. That that made me happy too. So
yeah, that's pretty awesome. Yeah, I do like What Ifs, and I'm a Blade fan. I'm reading that new series, so probably check this out too. James Tinney in the fourth and artist Joshua Hickson announced their new Image comic series coming this December, titled The Deviant. The series will be a horror themed comic about Santa themed serial killer. Interesting. I think we've had one of those before, but that cover is very creepy.
I love this cover.
Yeah, it's a really creepy cover. We have a creepy Santa, almost looking like Slender Man on the front. That art by Joshua Hickson is really good.
This one sounds interesting. I don't think I'll end up picking it up, but like it sounds like a really cool book. Like you said, that cover is creepy and awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the idea. I mean, it's cool to do more, you know, holiday themed kind of stories.
Yeah. And
put twists on them. Like, if we look, that's the thing. If we look back, any story that gets announced, we could find where it's been done.
Oh, yeah.
It's more about what's Tinian, who's been a pretty good horror writer for a while now under the radar. What's his twist going to be?
I just immediately thought of Happy with Grant Morrison when I thought of Killer Santa, but
even that's more like a thriller with a bunch of drugs thrown in.
Yeah.
A lot of Morrison. Drugs.
Yeah.
Where I think this will be like really creepy, like, modern day Freddy kind of stuff where it's just like a dude torturing people but dressed as Santa to make it there's something there. I think it'll be cool. People will be talking about it. People have had a hard on for Tinian ever since he left DC, so
yeah, he's been doing a lot of horror stuff, doing it pretty well. So
yeah. I like that book, Blue Book, he did. That was fun. So
yeah, I didn't read that one.
That was more at my alley. It's like UFO conspiracy stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Writer and artist Simon Kudransky announced that his new series, Blood Commandment, coming from Image Comics. The series is said to be a relationship between a father and his son as they live in the middle of nowhere trying to survive, which sounds sweet until you learn they're both vampires.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's a pretty sick looking cover. It looks like an 80s movie. Like an 80s horror movie or something. Like a VHS cover.
Yeah, the covers are funny as we go through them. Yeah. I love Seisman's work. He's the one that did Something Epic. is doing something epic. It's still coming out. And he did that book with Steve Niles last year, A Town Called Terror.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So his art's really good, and he seems to be going on his own, writing some cool stuff. So I'm down for some vampires with a great artist.
Wow.
Like, yeah, you can see.
Now I get it. Yeah.
The covers have a theme. What makes me laugh here is it's the Blood Commandment redrawn, making fun of the remastered. So
this one looks like the PS4 game case for Last of Us Remastered, which is amazing. Yeah.
And then the Lost Boys cover.
Oh, the Lost Boys. Nice. So that's awesome.
I think the book looks cool. I'm definitely going to check it out. And it's just awesome art. If you haven't seen his art, you should go like Google it or something. His interiors are phenomenal.
Nice. Really good. Boom Studios announced this week that Berserker is coming back with a prequel series from writer Madsen Tomlin, artist Rebecca Isaacs, titled Berserker Fallen Empire. And there he is as like Zeus or something. So yeah, we know this character is pretty much immortal through this dawn of the gods and Zeus himself. So it seems to be what we're getting here. I like the first series. It got kind of off the rails at the end with like the sci-fi. So maybe this will be a lot more grounded because it is like the origin. Might be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't read it. I really had no interest in it personally. But Madsen Tomlin writing it? Fuck yeah.
Matt Kent did the first series. So yeah, Madsen Tomlin doing this one is pretty cool.
His first two books I loved, that Batman book he did, and now the Vicious Circle book is his too. So
he's doing a great job with that book.
Yeah, good for him on getting this gig, and I hope it turns out well for people like you who enjoy Berserker, but not for me.
Yep. Boom Studios is another announcement from writer Tom King and artist Peter Gross. Titled Animal Pond. The series will be a twist on the Animal Farm story where animals in a pound take over and have to come to grips with the new governance they find themselves in charge of. Interesting coming from Tom King. This could be very depressing, but then I also see all this blood on the jail door that the cat is in, so it could be also really gruesome.
I'm sure it'll be fairly gruesome because I imagine that we're talking about. I'm sure he's going to take he says in there it's gonna be like a modern twist on Animal Farm.
Yeah.
And it's very obvious, like we're in a pound. Like what's in a pound nowadays? Cats and dogs, right?
Yeah, right.
So it's cats and dogs trying to live together under some sort of democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Like the themes are pretty like they might as well just punch you on the nose with it.
Yeah, for real.
But I'm a sucker for Animal Farm stuff. I forget what that other book was that was doing it recently that I really liked. So we'll see. It's tough. I was just having a conversation with somebody because actually a conversation with a bunch of people in a Discord channel where everybody's like going off of how great Tom King is. And I'm just like, I don't get it. I've read a bunch of his stuff, tried it, and I'm like, he's not a bad writer. Don't get me wrong. It's just something doesn't click with me with his stuff. So this will be a tough one, but I think if we get review copies, I'll give it a shot to see what it's all about.
It's definitely, I don't know if it's enough for me to. And when I read Tom King now, it's usually a finished trade because the payoff is an issue to issue with that guy.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, I think it was you I was talking to about it with his writing process. Like, that's from his writing. Like, he should just release OGNs because his writing process is, here's the entire series.
Mm-hmm.
And he writes it almost as an essay. Mm-hmm. And then the artist has to interpret it.
Yeah.
Which I think is part of the reason why Batman was rough because he couldn't do that. You can't write 100 issues at once.
No, and then, you can't. Yeah. Yeah, you need to like have stopping points.
Yeah, so we'll see with this one. I mean, it's a lot of we'll see for me this week, but
yeah,
I'm sure we're gonna get review copies of it, so I will be checking it out and like talking about it.
This is not in the same. This is not in the same excitement as the announcement of like Godzilla, Kong, and Justice League.
Oh no, that's a tough one to beat, man.
Yeah, that might be the announcement of the year.
Yeah.
And then we're gonna finish with some more sad news this week. Longtime Marvel comic artist Dan Green passed away, age 70. Best known for his work as an inker on Uncanny X-Men with John Romita Jr., some of those iconic X-Men art. There it is. That's the Wolverine we know and love right there with John Romita Jr.'s art. Another sad piece of news here, but you know, condolences to his family.
Yeah, definitely. You know, this week kept coming to mind with these announcements because, you know, 67, 70. Like, my father's going to be 71.
Yeah, right.
It just hit me hard this week with this stuff. I'm like, God damn it.
Yep. But,
I never read any of his stuff that he worked on because I was never a big X-Men fan. And a lot of it's like pre my time and my time being alive, let alone my time in comics. So,
right. Right.
But I know a lot of people who were really into X-Men and other stuff of that era spoke very highly of him. So be remembered through the work. But yeah, it sucks for his family and everything. Hopefully everything goes well for them.
And with that, we will talk about what we read this week. I read a whole whopping 2 comics because I just needed to catch up on some stuff. I caught up on Queen of Swords. I read the second one like you talked about last week. Yeah, it's a fun book. I mean, it's a barbaric book. The talking sword is great.
Yeah.
I did like how they did like the Dagobah thing where everybody shows up and has to fight like their, you know, their fears. Like, you know, Luke with Darth Vader kind of thing in the cave. I think that was on Dagobah, right? But that's what it reminded me of, where they're all like, oh, we have to face your fears, and they find out, like, oh, it's fake. But, it's an interesting story. And then the one book that I couldn't go without reading this week was Batman Neo-Gothic number 2 from our boys Kelly and Lanzig and then Dunbar on the art. Yeah, dude, awesome series, awesome issue. Huge fight with Killer Croc, you know, mutant deformed Killer Croc that's been living under Gotham for a long time, and we find out he's guarding something. There's another layer, you know, Batman's underneath Gotham, and he's like, oh, you know, the Killer Croc keeps referring to a tomb, he's got to guard it, blah blah blah, and we find out it's a tomb of owls, and everybody knows owls refers to Court of Owls. What a huge reveal, what an amazing issue. And Lanzig and Kelly, you son of a bitch, both of you collectively, that was awesome.
Yeah, that was great. When Court of Owls stuff pops up, yeah. I mean, I can't remember where it was talked about, it had to have been with you, but a recent conversation where I was like, you know, we haven't really gotten a ton of Court of Owls stuff since I'm it was
pretty sure it was on here, yeah,
so to see it here, in Batman Beyond was great. So
yeah, so that's cool. I can't wait to see the Beyond version of, because the owls still have to be around, right? You would think.
Yeah, and there's some interesting stuff there. There's some resurrection powers there, let's not forget that. This series is great. I don't even know what else to say about it.
Yeah, they're doing a great job. That's all I got to this week, Chris.
So some quick ones from last week. One you talked about was Night Terrors Superman number 2. Mm-hmm. I read, it was really good. Everything you said, I knew
you'd like it because the Aquaman stuff.
Yeah, I was gonna say the Aquaman stuff in particular was really great, and how they handled it. And I like kind of the comic book science as to why Aquaman wasn't
right
asleep the whole time.
Yeah,
and then the respect between Aquaman and Superman at the end was really great to see. So yeah, it's a good book. I Hate Fairyland number 8, and great issue. So we got like little kid Gert back, and now she's got to go find an old friend to find her way out of Fairyland, because she was promised if she killed old Gert that she would be able to leave. But then in classic Gert fashion, she fucks it all up, and now she has to find another way out, because the way she had is no longer available. And then Daredevil number 14 came out last week. This is the last issue of Daredevil from Chip and Chichello. Really great ending. It was bittersweet, but I absolutely loved it. And now the whole thing will be out for everybody to check out in trades and whatnot soon. So I suggest not sleeping on that one. That was a good run. Cool. And the last one from last week is What If Dark Moon Knight number 1, which is not a really great What If book. And it takes place, it's like Moon Knight, Mark Spector issue. Yes, it takes place after Mark Spector Moon Knight number 3 from the 90s, in which Moon Knight actually dies. And then the woman he goes to save comes back, and she takes the power of Ra, the Ra. Sun god. Yeah, Ra, instead of Khonshu, and becomes a Moon Knight-like figure, but for the sun. And she's named the Luminary.
Interesting.
And then from this week, let's start with some Kickstarter books. Y'all might remember this from like last year because it was digital only, but they did a Kickstarter for it. Death Transit Tanager. I absolutely love this book. I read it digitally, but I did the Kickstarter and I reread it this week. Cool. And I really recommend it. It's like a Metroid-esque kind of book. But the whole kind of spoilers for the first like story, but it's, I don't know how else to explain it. The whole thing is that she gets these messages from people, presumably their souls, and she has to go find their bodies and transport them to somewhere else. And that's kind of the big reveal at the end of the first story, is that the person who hired her is actually like a soul that took her to this planet, to where he was killed, and now she has to bring him back to be buried. And it's really great black and white art. Just I can't recommend it enough. And then my favorite book, but this one's gonna be hard for people for me to recommend because there's too much like caveats on it, kind of like Ahsoka. But it's I Summon Cthulhu to Fund My Kickstarter from Pat Shand.
That's awesome.
So I absolutely love this book. It's kind of a fictitious version of the real world where Pat's first starting off as a comic creator, and he had just done his story in Angel and then was going to launch his first Kickstarter. And it goes nowhere, but then he runs into people at the con, and the people at the con are like people that we've had on the show, friends of ours. So we're talking about Travis Gibb, we're talking about Charlie Stickney, and the list just goes on, Russell Nolte, and so on and so forth. And he finds out that they're all part of this cult that worship at Cthulhu and the different elder gods. And that's how they're able to fund their Kickstarters.
Amazing.
So he finds one that is known as the Waifu goddess.
Oh, my God.
And, of course, it's Pat Shand. So Pat's like got this whole other publishing line he does where he does. We joke around with him. It's like it's sexy comics, but it's like it's comics based around sex. It's cheeky comics. And so, of course, he goes for the waifu god to fund his Kickstarter.
That's awesome.
And it works and everything. And then he has to give like these sacraments to it all the time, every time he goes back to that con every year. And he ends up finding out that the whole time he was actually like helping this demon escape. And that demon then helped Cthulhu escape. And that's kind of how the first issue ends. So I really loved it, but like my friends are in it.
Yeah, right.
And like I sent you one of the panels. Like,
yeah.
There's literally a panel where it says where they think they're going to like the underground scene that Charlie Stickney invites them to, and they don't know what's going on. And the one guy is just like, I mean, we can go, but like he thinks it's a sex party. And he says the line like, I'm not going to fuck Charlie Stickney if we're here. And it just makes me laugh.
It's awesome. So,
I don't know how to recommend it, but I did really enjoy it.
Cool.
Captain America finale. This is the end of the Lanz and Kelly run. Kind of this whole issue is just replacing all the pieces back in the board for Straczynski to take over.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good issue. I liked it, but it's literally just kind of getting everything back in place for the next guy to do his thing.
Okay.
So I wouldn't recommend it if you're not a regular reader of Captain America. Marvel Unleashed number one. This is the Pet Avengers book that Kyle Starks is doing.
Nice.
So yes, so Lockjaw gets kidnapped by Kraven. And then we meet this dog who's a stray who finds one of Demolition Man's masks in the garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And decides that he's going to become a hero to take up justice and calls himself D-Dog.
Oh my god.
And then, like, there's another dog who asks for his help, and it's a poodle, and we find out that poodle's master is, like, a hive scientist.
Mm-hmm.
And they decide to go to the Avengers Tower to get the Avengers, but they're, and this is one of my favorite lines, they're off in space fighting a sentient cloud. And so Red Wing and I forget the cat's name from Captain Marvel, but they team up with him and to go figure out what's going on. They, you know, they confirm the suspicions, and at the end they decide that they need to go find more members to help them out because the scientists actually summoned a demon. And the one guy goes, well, the only way to fight a demon is with a god. And that's when we get the reveal that they're going to go for Throg, the Frog of Thunder.
The Frog of Thunder, yeah. Nice.
And then there's like, there's a great line where like the stray's kind of like, I don't know, she's, I don't want to say ditzy, but just like not that smart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And everybody's like, so you have no affiliation with Demolition Man? And she's like, no, I don't even know who that is. So why'd you call yourself D-Dog? What's the D stand for? And she's like, dog. So one of them's like, so you're dog? She's like, I don't know. That's awesome. A funny, cute little line. Immortal Thor number one came out. Really enjoyed it. It's kind of, it's resetting a lot of the stuff that Donnie did in his run. And I forget the other writer who kind of finished Donnie's stuff after he had the accident. But it brings back Asgard and kind of puts it back in its place. Loki's no longer the god of the Frost Giants anymore, or the king of the Frost Giants anymore. He's doing his own thing. We get the Rainbow Bridge back in this. So it's nice. A big reset button is what this issue is. But then it also sets up what's to come forward. So when they rebuild the bridge, Thor goes to Midgard and kind of just does his thing, saving people and hanging out with humans. And that's when this being comes and attacks and he has a fight. And that's going to set up the story going forward. And it seems like they're basically setting there's humans, there's gods, and then there's these beings. And they even say in there, like, these beings see gods as gods see humans. So there's like a hierarchy there, but nobody had seen them before. They were thought to be myth.
Interesting.
So, interesting kind of thing. And my last book, Mike, is The Schlub, number one.
The Schlub?
This is from KLC Press, Donnie Cates and Ryan Stegman's line. Mm-hmm. And it's written by Stegman with Kenny Porter. The whole thing here is we've got a guy, this, you know, an overweight kind of bum dentist who's running his own practice, but it's going under. He's divorced, but he's still in love with his ex-wife, even though she's done all these things to him. He's a schlub. And he lives in a world of superheroes, and basically Superman falls into his practice, and the villain they're going against switches their minds. So now the schlub is in Superman's mind, and Superman's mind is in the schlub's. And he now has ultimate power. And he's even told, like, dude, you have the power to just destroy everything. So try not to use it until I figure out how to fix this. That's awesome. Then the next page, it's him just using his powers for his own, like, deeds. Fun, goofy kind of story. I like the where they're going with it. The art fits the feel of the book. It's very cartoony in the art. I would really recommend this. I think you would really like it, Mike.
Okay.
And just anyone out there who likes superhero stuff but wants kind of some levity in their superhero stuff, I think this is the book out there right now, at least this one issue, that is going to bring it. So nice. I was very happy with this issue.
Cool. Well, awesome.
Mike, that was everything I read this week. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Fortress Ricker on X, Twitter, whatever. Where can they find you and or the show?
You can find me on most social media networks at Fortress Chris. And you can find me, or you can find the show at FortressComicNews.com or at FortressComics_on X. And if you want to support the show, the best way to do it is to give us a 5-star review on the podcatcher of your choice. Or if you're watching the YouTube version, to like, subscribe, share, and comment down below. If you want to go the extra mile, there's Patreon at patreon.com/FortressComics. Thank you all so much for watching and or listening this week. We'll see y'all here next week.
See ya.